Okay, let's review this week's material from the beginning of Masechta Ksubos until Perek Gimel Mishnah Daled. The first five Mishnahs of the Masechta talked about a Tanas Basulim, when a man has relations with his wife for the first time, and he finds out that she's actually not a Basula, which means she tricked him because she told him he was a Basula, and therefore, if it's true that she tricked him, then the marriage would be a Mekach Taus, which is when someone makes a sale, and in this case he's acquiring the wife, based on a lack of knowledge, and the sale would be invalid, and therefore she must get divorced without receiving a ksuba. So firstly, the Mishnah said that a basula is married on a Wednesday, so that the next day, Thursday, the beis din already there, and the husband will go straight away to the beis din and make his tanas basulim. He's not married on Sunday, so that he's got 3 days to prepare, and an almona, who has been married before, is married on a Thursday, so that she has 3 days to spend with her husband, Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. We then said that a ksuba of a basula is 200 zuz and an almona is 100 zuz. If someone had been engaged previously but not married, they're still considered a basula, and a convert, captive, and maidservant who are freed or converted below the age of 3, they're still a basula because below the age of 3, they do not lose their basula status even by having relations. Okay. Any relations involving a koton are not considered proper relations, and therefore the woman would be still considered a basula, even if she is a gdoila. We had a machloik is about a mukas 8, which is someone, a woman who is not a basula, but not as a result of relations, but as a result of having an injury. According to Rabbi Meir, since she's never had relations, her ksuba is still 200 zuz because she's a basula. According to Chachomim, even though it didn't happen in a normal way, she's still considered a non-basula. We spoke about the minhag in Yehuda, where the husband and wife had yichud already after they got engaged, before they were married, and therefore he can never make a tanas basulim because he could have had relations with her, thus making her a non-basula already before they were married. And there was a minhag of the Beis Din of Kohanim who sat by the Beis HaMikdash that they would say that a ksuba of a basula who is a bas kohen, her ksuba is not 200 zuz but 400 zuz because she has better yichus. We then brought four mishnayos where we had machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer always said she's believed, and Rabbi Yeshua said she's not. And we basically gave the same reason for each one, and we gave a few reasons. Number one, according to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, she's believed because of a migo. A migo is when someone makes a statement which is not as advantageous for him as another statement which he could have made, and therefore he's believed because he could have made a better lie. So in all the cases we brought, she could have made a better lie, and therefore she's got a migo, and therefore she is believed. Another reason we brought is because of Bori Veshema, Bori Odif. If one person claims that something definitely happened, and in that case it would be the woman, because she knows what happened, and another person claims that something else might have happened, and that's the husband, because he can never know what exactly happened, because it didn't involve him, the definite claim is stronger and wins, and therefore you would believe the woman. And the third reason we gave is because she has a chazoka, meaning we assume her status remains the same unless proven otherwise, and therefore she's got a chazoka of, number one, being doing the right thing, and number two, not being married before, not having had relations before, and therefore she's believed. On the other side, we had Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua said we don't believe her, because he only holds of migoy when she could have said nothing, yet she said something. In all the cases, she had to say a certain claim, and therefore he doesn't hold of the rule of migo. And the main reason why he held that she's not believed is because hamitzi mechaveira olav harai, that the person who's trying to take something from someone else, in this case, she's trying to take her kasuba from the husband, so she must bring the proof. If she does not bring the proof, then she does not receive her kasuba. And then we had the concept of roiv, when it came up in a story where a girl was forced to have relations with someone outside the city, and that person ran away, and we're not sure who had relations with her. So we assume that it's since the majority of the city would allow her to still marry a kohen, meaning the majority of the city are not a mamzer or a nosin, a mamzer being someone who's born out of an illegal relations, and a nosin being someone descended from the Givonim in the time of Sefer Yeshua, who mixed with the Jews but weren't Jewish. So since most of the city are not those, and therefore she would still, if they would have had relations with her, she's still allowed to marry a kohen. So if we just summarize the Perek Aleph, the first half of Perek Aleph discusses Tanas Basulim, and the second half of Perek Aleph discusses whether we believe a woman. Again, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say we do believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua says we don't believe her. Perek Beis brings a case where, for some reason, a ksuba was not written, but she is still going to receive her ksuba. However, we're not sure if she was an almona or a basula, if her ksuba was 100 zuz or 200 zuz. So we said if there are edim that on her wedding day, she wore a sort of scarf in her hair, but her hair was not completely covered, that means she was a basula. And according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Bereka, there was also another minhag then to give out sort of pekelech to the children, and that only happened at a basula's wedding, so if there are edim that occurred, then she receives 200 zuz. We then explained that Rabbi Yeshua, although he argued with Migoy in Perek Aleph, he would agree with Migoy, like we mentioned before, if she could have said nothing, or if someone could have said nothing, and yet nevertheless he makes the claim in the first place. For example, if someone says, this field was your father's, but I bought it from him, he holds of Migoy. Why? Because you've also got the concept of hapesha osar hu hapesha hiter. That if I say something which makes me osar or chayv in something, and then I proceed to say something else which patters me, which makes me exempt, then I'm believed. And Rabbi Yeshua holds that Migoy plus hapesha osar hu hapesha hiter, that beats hamoitzi mechave olav harai. Whereas Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer in Perek Aleph would hold that even a normal Migoy would beat hamoitzi mechave olav harai. We brought another example of hapesha osar hu hapesha hiter with regards to kiyum shtoris, which is when you verify the signatures on a document through Edim. So if Edim come along and say, we were Edim, but through apostle. So again, you've got hapesha osar hu hapesha hiter, and therefore they're believed. Since we were on the subject of Edim, we bought a machlokes Rebbe and the Chachomim, how many Edim you need to verify the document. According to Rebbe, you need two witnesses for each signature. Whereas according to the Chachomim, you need two witnesses, but over the whole document as a whole. And therefore, if you've got one witness on each, for example, the person who signed himself says that this is my signature, then if you've got that for both signatures, then that's enough according to the Chachomim, since you have two Edim on the whole document. Another example of hapesha osar hapesha hiter was if you say I was married, but I'm divorced. Similarly, if you say I was captured, but I was not forced to have relations, again, you were the one who made yourself possibly be chayv, and therefore, if you say you're exempt, then you are believed. But in all these cases, if someone else first comes along and says, for example, you were married, or this field belonged to my father, or you were captured, and then all she says is the pesha hiter part, then she's not believed. We then talked about women who were captured, and we said that even a single witness, who is usually an invalid witness, is believed to say she was not forced to have relations, since it wasn't her fault at all. And anyway, it's not for sure that she was forced to have relations, and therefore we believe anyone, even one witness, to say that she was not forced to have relations. And even if there were two women who were captured together, and each one testifies for each other that they weren't forced, we still believe them, and we don't suspect them of working together. Similarly, two men who say, I'm a Kohen, if they only say it for themselves, they're not believed. But if each one says for themselves, we had four opinions, whether one aid is enough in order to make someone a Kohen. According to the Tanakhama, we said that even one aid is believed to make someone a Kohen. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the second opinion, one is not. And the reason for that is because, even according to the Tanakhama, it's only enough to make him a Kohen Mejabonon, so he can eat Truma Mejabonon. Rabbi Yehuda is worried if we allow him to eat Truma Mejabonon, people eventually will come to assume that he's a normal Kohen, and even Forma de Oraisa matters. The third opinion, Rabbi Elazar held that we believe one witness if there are no protesters. If there are protesters, then even if there are two other witnesses who say that he's a Kohen, if they came separately, then we don't join them together to make two witnesses to cancel out the other two witnesses. Whereas according to the fourth opinion, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, even if two witnesses come and say he's not a Kohen, protest that he's not a Kohen, and then two separate witnesses, one before those two witnesses, and one after, comes along and says he is a Kohen, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, we join those two Edom together and say that he is a Kohen. We then went on to explain that a woman who is captured by Goyim for money is allowed to return to her husband, even if her husband's a Kohen. Whereas if she's captured and she's sentenced to death, then she's forbidden to return to her husband, even if he's a Yisrael. The reason for that is because if a woman is forced to have relations, then she's osa to a Kohen. But if she volunteers herself for relations, then she's even osa to a Yisrael, if her husband's a Yisrael. And if she's only captured for money, we're assuming that the Goyim want their money, and therefore they're not going to ruin their chances of getting the money, so they're not going to do anything illegal. Whereas if she's sentenced to death, she might willingly offer herself to have relations in order to free herself, and therefore she's forbidden to her husband, even if her husband is a Yisrael. We then brought, if a city is conquered by non-Jews and they enter the city, then all the women in there are possible, they're invalid to marry a Kohen, because we're worried that they were forced to have relations with one of the enemy soldiers. However, if someone has a witness, even one possible witness, to say that he was not forced to have relations, then he is believed. And then we brought another very important rule, Ein Odom Meid Aidei Atzma. You can't give witness if it affects yourself, and therefore, let's say if it's the man saying that I was with my wife the whole time, he's not believed since it affects himself. At the end of Perek Beis, we brought cases where someone is believed whilst he's a godel to say that he saw something when he was a katan. And the basic rule was that if that matter is mujabbanon, or there's a majority chance that it's true anyway, so we might even assume that it's true without the aid, then we believe him. But if it's a monetary matter, meaning we're deciding who owns a right to a certain place, then we don't believe him unless he was a godel when he actually saw it. The beginning of Perek Gimel discussed someone who forces a Narum Arosa to have relations with him. We said there are three conditions and two punishments. The three conditions are, she needs to be a Nara, meaning she's between 12 and 12 and a half years old. She has to have never been engaged before, and she has to be a Basula. And the two punishments are, he has to give a fine to the father, and he needs to marry her if she desires to do so. What happens if you're not allowed to marry her? For example, it's your sister or something. You're still chayv to give the Knas. However, we then came to a very important rule of kim le bidrabo mine. If you do one action for which you're chayv two punishments, you only get the harsher punishment. And therefore, if you're chayv misa, korish doesn't apply because it's not by the hands of man. But if you're chayv misa in the beis din, then you would not be chayv the kanas since you get the harsher punishment from beis din. We then brought a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda Glili and Rabbi Akiva about if she's missing one condition, meaning she was engaged before, and this is her second engagement. According to Rabbi Yehuda Glili, she's not got one of the conditions, and therefore he's not chayv a kanas. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, she does have a kanas, and the kanas goes to herself, because the condition of her not being engaged is only with regards to giving the kanas to her father. But if she has been engaged before, then he's still chayv in the kanas, in the fine, but he gives it to her and not her father. Finally, we mentioned differences between an oines and a mafata. An oines is someone who forces a woman to have relations, a mafata is someone who convinces a woman to have relations with him, and she does it willingly. The mafata is exempt from paying for her pain since she did it willingly, and furthermore, the mafata is only chayv either the fine or to marry her. Meaning only if the woman or the woman's father refuses for her to marry him, only then would he be obligated to pay the fine.